Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
This is the season. My name is Wednesday. My partner is Frank Jones. The chief is Captain Kellogg. December the 24th, Christmas Eve, they brought in a guy named Grudge. When I heard what they booked him on, my blood ran cold. It was a 409-6325-096704. Not believing in Santa Claus. 4:35 p.m. I was working the holiday watch at a homicide with Frank.
Hang up your stocking yet, Joe?
Yeah, just before I come down. You too, Frank?
Always do. Hung it up early just in case I have to work late tonight. Wouldn't want to miss out when Santa Claus comes, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure wouldn't. Be a shame.
What you gonna do tomorrow, Joe? What you gonna do on Christmas? You got any plans?
Nothing much.
Why don't you come by the house, Joe? We're going to have Christmas dinner. You know, all the trimmings.
Mm-hmm.
Turkey, celery stuffing, oysters maybe, chestnuts.
Mm-hmm.
All the trimmings. Cranberry sauce. Love to have you.
Mm-hmm.
The missus always fixes a plate of relish with them little carrot sticks. You know, olives, pickles, scallions. Most folks call them green onions, but they're really scallions. Did you ever notice that, Joe?
Ever notice what, Frank?
How most folks call them green onions, but they're really scallions.
Mm-hmm. Scallions.
Anytime after two, Joe. Love to have you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll see.
Love to have you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll see.
The missus always fixes a plate of relish with them carrot sticks. You know them little carrot sticks?
Mm-hmm.
Olives, pickles, scallions.
Mm-hmm. Let's not go through that again.
Love to have you. Go through what again, Joe?
How most folks call them green onions, but they're really scallions.
Oh. You noticed that too, huh, Joe?
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of The Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. If Mother Earth and Father Time had a baby, never mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Good planets are in the main. Right.
Happy holidays.
Uh-huh. It's so happy. I'm happy.
Are you? I'm happy to just be alive.
I am too. It's good to be here.
It's good to be anywhere.
At the same token, my bed was really nice today. It was very hard to leave.
And I know that you got to understand, Heather has been burning the midnight oil here. In the service of the radio station for the last couple of weeks,
yeah,
at least.
2 weeks, almost three.
And have we done this officially? Is the big no?
No, not officially, no. No.
So I can't say anything?
Not really, no.
I really can't say anything about why there's no tables and no desks?
Oh, that we can talk about, yeah. I thought you meant like me...
No.
All right, no.
Oh, nobody cares about that,
yeah,
Heather.
Yeah, I was going to say, good. It's not that big a deal. I'm proud, but it's not that big a deal.
No. Yeah, she might get a little promotion, but that's a different story. And it's not in Mike Novak LLC, because Mike Novak LLC has no, you know, if you got promoted.
I'm as high up in the company as I'm going to get.
Yeah, exactly. If you got promoted in my organization, you would have to become me. That's it.
No, thanks.
I don't blame you.
I like playing in the dirt, but nah.
Yeah. I wouldn't wish being me on anybody.
But yes, no, there are no computers and no phones, and lots of dust bunnies have seen the light of day and are sweeping about the hallways here because we have moved locations. We have a new studio.
Yeah.
Which we are not in presently.
No, that's the thing. It's sort of schizoid right now.
It's a little displaced, but...
Meaning WCPT, and has Dick talked about this or anybody talked about this?
I don't know if Dick's talked about it. I don't know.
We're moving.
Yes.
We're moving.
From basically Midway to O'Hare. We're going from
basically from one airport to another.
Yes, we're going to be now closer to O'Hare rather than Midway.
The problem is the office part of it has moved.
Yes.
And that's already up by O'Hare, but the radio part of it, the broadcast part of it, is still on South Pulaski.
For a couple of weeks, yeah.
So I'm going to need a new intro because we're not going to be in between Paco's Tacos and Zaca Tacos
anymore. No, we'll have to walk around the neighborhood and think
and
of something
see.
Catchy.
I bet I can find something.
I know we're close to, I think it's Super Dog. Is that the one that's got the giant hot dog and the loincloth on the building?
Loincloth?
Yes, loincloth. Like Tarzan?
Sure. Well, that sounds like
yeah,
Super
that's
a, Dog.
That's that would blocks be... away from us at our new location.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. We've got the new...
So,
giant, yeah.
We go from, you know, all the Mexican food we could want up to, you know, all the Chicago-style dogs we could eat.
So Heather's been helping the move go and working very late hours. Have you had any chance to do your conspicuous consumption for the holidays?
I actually had to tell everyone no yesterday because the movers actually came to move the office yesterday. And we were here late Friday night packing and filling boxes and labeling everything. And so they were like, can you come on Saturday? And I was like, no, I'm sorry, I can't. I did all my Christmas shopping yesterday.
Wow.
I did like a 6-hour burn, and I spent money like you would not believe.
Well, see, I did not want to hear that, but I did not want to hear that, but that's all right.
But no, because
I'm in the, you know what, retailers fend for yourselves this year mode.
No,
that's me.
I was very good. But I have my son and my niece and my nephew and the kids, and then pulled my sister in our family grab bag, and then I had, you know, my son's teachers and. It's crazy when you have kids, your list like quadruples. It does. Cause like,
well,
that was what I did. I got everybody taken care of.
And that is the true tyranny of the holidays is children. That is the true tyranny.
I don't call it tyranny.
I call it tyranny.
And this is
for my friend, my atheist friend in Edmonton, Alberta, who I hope is listening. Who wrote
Edmonton,
about the
Alberta? That's where my family is. I have family up there.
Are you kidding me?
No.
You know, and that's really
my
cool. You know,
my brother married her and moved north.
I love the fact that we're starting to get mail from all over the planet, and that's just so cool.
Yeah.
And this is a woman who listens right now, and it's a matter of fact. She wrote about the tar sands. You know, we talked about with Josh.
Well, they have a lot of the oil fields. That's oil country in Canada, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And she wrote me first of all, you know, to tell me about playing Christmas carols, which she wasn't really happy with. But that's okay because I understand it. I understand it. And so we started this little conversation, and she got hooked on Air America when it started, and she can pick up Chicago's Progressive Talk on the internet. But, you know, I figured this is Canada. You can get it. It's like it's a 51st state, basically, right?
I don't know if they call themselves that.
I know,
but
they don't.
They're our neighbors, for sure. they got better health care, you know.
But she was, you know, talking about, she wrote about, you know, that my playing too much Christmas music. And I get it. You know, that's fine. But she listens to WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk, because it's hard for her to get other progressive stations.
There
and I thought,
not many. We're
Canada?
One of the
Why is that a difficulty? And then she started to tell me about all the things she couldn't get up in Canada. And I thought, wait a second, what about internet freedom? I thought, certainly in Canada, you could get whatever you want. She says, yours is the only channel that isn't blocked. The only one I can listen to on my internets. It's like living in China here.
Get out, really?
I used to listen to the Seattle and Portland stations, too, but over time, they became unavailable. I'm thrilled that WCPT keeps doing whatever it is they need to do to sneak their signal over the border. This is Canada. What's going on in Canada?
I'm sure they have as many problems as we do.
She says she cannot get MSNBC on her cable system.
My guess is
gets Fox, of course.
Oh, of course. Well, my guess is that there's some kind of tariff or some kind of broadcast thing that, you know, networks have to pay for or apply for, like a license or something. That would be my best guess. And some of those stations might not be willing to pay it.
If somebody knows about why in Canada, she can't get the Comedy Central website. She says it drives her crazy.
Comedy Central's great stuff.
She says Comedy Central's website, the source of so many great Jon Stewart video clips, and
yes.
She says it's not available as that channel made a deal with our Canadian comedy channel. And guess what? Canadians are not funny.
Yes,
all right?
They are.
No, I'm kidding you. I know.
John Candy was Canadian. Dan Aykroyd's Canadian.
I know.
Catherine, what's her name? Oh, she was in Beetlejuice, and she used to be on SL.
But why
SLC
would you
TV.
Just limit it to them?
She's
why
hysterical.
Not? Why not open the whole thing up? You know, it's anyway. So she says they made a deal with the Canadian Comedy Channel, so the latter is allowed to block Comedy Central's site and all of their videos. I do not get that.
I don't get that.
That doesn't make any sense to
me.
But
if she wants to see, can't she just go to like the Daily Show website, not necessarily the Comedy Central website?
I don't know,
because I go to that website. Continuously for a good laugh.
And she says, and don't even ask me about how bad our TV is here. Although we have lots of channels, most programs coming in from American TV are simulcast on a Canadian channel. The Canadian channel takes control of the show, substituting its own promos and Canadian ads. This is done clumsily, and the start or end of shows are often lopped off.
Oh, really?
My satellite provider allows me to watch Fox News but won't carry MSNBC. Oh, I feel so. I feel your pain up in Edmonton,
poor
Alberta.
Thing.
Oh.
If I was trapped up in oil country with just Fox News, I don't know if I'd last long.
That would be terrible.
The folks on Gilligan's Island had a better shot than I would have.
Let's get to some real stuff on the show here. We got to give Joe Hygin a call from Shady Hill Gardens out in Elburn. I haven't had Joe on the show in a month of Sundays. I think it's been a couple of years, actually. And we're going to talk about care and feeding of your holiday plants. You know, the plant you got. That is a poinsettia, or it's a Christmas cactus, or it's something like that, and you have no idea how to take care of it. And you just know you're going to kill the thing. Joe will be here in a second. And I've got some sites on my website. Go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show. If you're interested, I've got some great Illinois extension sites. Ron Wolford from Chicago Master Gardeners posted some stuff, and I grabbed that. He's actually got some videos about how to take care of your plants. And you can do that if you can't talk, get here. But you're welcome to call us. Are you okay over there?
I'm all right.
I'm all right.
I'm shocked you didn't tease me for the fact that I made it in here by the skin of my teeth.
I didn't. See, I wasn't even going to bust you.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I wasn't
that.
Even going to bust
that's
you.
That's why I'm thumping around right now.
I wasn't
was
going to bust
set
you
up.
For the fact that you were running in the door as the theme music was playing.
Yeah, no, I fell through the door right at, Paco's that's and Tacos and Zacos.
First hour's plants, 773-838-9278. If you got questions about your holiday plants and how to take care of them. I know, it's the week before Christmas, and maybe you got them already, but this is the point where you've had it for a week and you're thinking, I wonder if I'm taking care of it right. You can give us a call. Joe Hygin will be with me in just a second. Second hour, well, of course, Rick DeMaio at the end of this hour with weather. Second hour, Peggy Salazar, who's the executive director of the Southeast Environmental Task Force, and Tom Shepard, who's the secretary and board member, are going to talk about something good. This is amazing. Something good that happened in the Calumet region when it comes to environment, which you don't hear very often.
No, you don't.
Not the Calumet region. It's always like it's the dumping ground.
Like,
can't
you walk on that river on top of it some
something
days?
Like that. But the governor stepped up, and Representative Mike Quigley stepped up, and some money's going there, and there's something called the Millennium Reserve Initiative, and that's going to happen in the Calumet region. We'll talk about that victory. But then we turn around in the second part of the 10 o'clock hour to talk about something that's not so good environmentally, and that's about Starved Rock State Park. And have you been to Starved Rock?
Yes, I have.
Who hasn't been in Illinois?
Yeah.
If you haven't been, you might want to go now because they're going to put an open pit sand mine right next to the entrance.
We had a listener call us about that last week.
And the listener, Bob from Rogers Park, is the guy who enlightened me to this. And then we started communicating this week. And then I got an email from Jack Darren from Illinois Sierra Club. And what's going on over there is this company wants to put in an open pit sand mine. So they and it's the sand that's used for fracking, believe it or not.
Oh, God.
So they sell it to companies for I know, it's just everything about this is so
and
wrong.
And fracking doesn't work.
Well, it works. It just pollutes.
It pollutes, but like, okay, what you're trying to get out of it is really minute compared to the damage that it causes.
Well, this is such this is a sidebar to that kind of thing, and they're going to put an open pit sand mine next to the entrance of Starved Rock State Park. So, as you're doing your walk along the quiet canyon, you'll hear
the. Oh man, you're kidding me!
And the zoning board of LaSalle County passed it unanimously this past week, and it goes to the whole board in January, January 12th. So we have about 3 weeks to try to knock some sense into these people and talk about this wonderful treasure that we have in Illinois.
Oh, we would go hiking there in high school field trips. We'd go, and we'd canoe up there, and we'd I remember one time I fell in the river. The waterfall that comes down was half frozen because it was just at the end, just at the start of springtime, and it was barely warm enough for us to be out there. And the whole thing was just this gorgeous ice, you know, cascading down the side. But part of it was starting to thaw, so it was dripping on one side. And everybody, we climbed up and we went around, and we were actually standing underneath it where normally you'd be getting showered because there was a full waterfall there. But now it's like more than half frozen. And then we had to do this interesting thing where we had to slide across these logs and like grip them with the back of our hands and step over to the other rock to not go in the water. Well, needless to say, everybody else's gloves had grips on them. Mine were just cloth gloves. So when I tried to slide down these logs and hold them with my hands, needless to say, there was absolutely no traction whatsoever, and ploop, I went right in.
Yikes.
Cold. Cold
nice.
Water.
Well,
I was awake.
We need more people to have experiences like Heather's at Starved Rock State Park.
And people in high school still bring it up. Remember when you fell in the river? Yeah, I do.
Yeah. All right. So that's coming up second hour. Jack Darren from Illinois Sierra Club will be here. Mike Phillips, who's a geologist. In LaSalle County, and Debbie Burns, a planner from the area. We will all be talking about the open pit sand mine that might be approved right next to Starved Rock State Park. Isn't that wonderful? All right, let's go to the phones and bring in my buddy Joe Hygin, who I haven't talked to in a long time. How you doing, Joe?
Good, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. Joe, of course, is at Shady Hill Gardens in Elburn. Used to be Batavia and Elburn, but those days are long gone, aren't they?
Yep. Last 2007 was our last.
Oh my goodness!
Year. 2006 was our last Christmas in Batavia.
Really? Has it been that long?
Sadly, yes.
Yeah. Well,
time flies by.
It does, and the thing about the location that was in Batavia, it was in a neighborhood, so it was kind of cool. You know, you drive and you see houses, and then suddenly, oh look, greenhouses.
Right.
But now you've got the Crystal Palace out in Elburn.
You got it.
And what road are you guys on? I always forget.
Route 38.
Oh well, that's
Roosevelt Road.
Right.
Lincoln Highway, whatever they call it, wherever it goes.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's very near me. I could take Roosevelt all the way out, and it'd only take me a day and a half to get there.
That sounds about right.
But it's a beautiful location. Last time I was there, surrounded by cornfields. You still got that?
We still do, you know. I mean, I guess it alternates. Some years it's bean fields.
Yes, that's true. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, at least they're
fields.
At least they're rotating crops.
Exactly.
And you guys, your business model is really interesting because you do shut down for part of the year, and that's going to be coming up at the end of this week, right?
That's right. I mean, we our retail closes down. Certainly, we're there all the time. But, we're open approximately 6.5 months of the year for retail. We're open, you know, April, May, June, then we're open in the fall, and we're open at Christmas time. But, it's a seasonal business, so it makes sense for us.
Yeah, and not everybody does, and I'm glad it makes sense for you guys. And you do a lot of your own growing, including poinsettia. All right, and I have to ask you, how do you pronounce poinsettia?
Well, I mean, we say poinsettia. Technically, it should be poinsettia.
No.
You sound like a big freak when you say it like that.
No, we learned last year that the correct pronunciation is poinsettia.
Wow, nice. Were you talking to a somebody from the South, perhaps?
I don't know. It was Leah Petrusiak, who's one of our staff, who came up with Ponzetta, and I don't know where she got it from. I like it because that way nobody can complain because they don't even get it. So,
well, they were named after a guy named Joel Poinsett, and
yes,
his name was P-O-I-N-S-E-T-T. So they just Latined it up with a little I-A on the end, so it's Poinsettia, technically, but like I said.
Poinsettia.
Poinsettia.
Okay. And you guys grow your own there.
We do. We purchase rooted cuttings from another grower. So the ones that we get is about an inch or an inch and a half of stem with two or three leaves on them. And then we plant them and grow them from there. And depending on the size, you plant the largest sized first, and we start planting those the week of the 4th of July.
Oh, my goodness.
That's why, you know, people come in at this time of the year, and they're like, oh, they're so beautiful. And, you know, they're wearing a warm scarf and a nice coat, and I think about planting them and the sweat running in my eyes. And yeah, so.
Well, that's a really good point, Joe, in that if you're in that kind of business, the poinsettias don't just magically appear.
They don't. You
got to grow them, and as you said, you're growing them in July, and I've mentioned it on the show before, especially with a business like yours. Come July, you're already thinking about Christmas because this is what you're going to be selling.
Well, and that goes hand in hand with right now, if any of our retail customers would walk across into our production, we're on our second stick of geranium cuttings. So all of our geranium stock is going gangbusters right now because it's going to start producing the most cuttings in January and February, and that's all for, you know, May and June.
You're like the fashion industry, you know.
I say that all the time. We are like the fashion industry, you know.
Because, yes, you're thinking ahead to the next, well, two seasons ahead, basically.
Exactly.
All right. What should people know, first of all? They get a poinsettia. They bring it home. What do most people do wrong when they bring it home?
The easiest thing to remember about taking care of a poinsettia is they're a plant that doesn't like extremes. And so by that, I mean they don't want to sit in a south or a west window that gets sun all day directly. But they don't want to sit, you know, in your hall closet that gets nothing all day either. So they're a plant that does well in bright, indirect light. And along the same lines, you know, most plants, spring plants that we grow, we always tell people, let them dry out and then water them thoroughly. Poinsettias are the exception to that rule. They like a little bit more even moisture. So they're a plant that you could water a little bit, a little more frequently. And I think, you know, they often come either in foil or those like pot caps or something like that. It's easy to give them a little water and then that to hold the water, and they sit in there in water. They definitely don't like that. So if you take them out of the covers and water them, that's probably the best thing. You know, I don't know if you remember, a lot of our watering at our greenhouses are called flood benches. And flood benches are, the plants are grown on a bench that's like a tray, and it floods with water. So the plants sit in the water for anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes, and then they take up as much as they need from the bottom of the pot. So if it's possible with your poinsettia, if you'd fill your sink with, you know, 3-4 inches of water, set it in there for 10, 20 minutes, that's probably the best way to water it because it gives it a good even watering and it's not going to take up more than it necessarily needs.
That's great. You set it in there, and then you pull it out of the sink and just put it on a tray.
Yeah.
But don't put more water into it. Just let it soak up what it's going to. And you're right about the foil thing. I think what happens with folks is they water the plant and they don't ever look inside the foil to see what's going on at the base of the plant.
Correct.
And then they water again and they water again, and suddenly that foil, that's going to hold on to water, and this poinsettia is sitting in this water, and that's not good for it because then it can, rot the roots?
Yeah, and they just don't like to sit damp. And the third extreme that they don't like, Mike, is they don't like extremes of temperature. So they don't want to be like by your front door that gets opened all the time. And they also don't want to be by a heat vent, you know, that blows on it. So any of those things, like the heat, the light, the water, the first thing that will happen with poinsettias is the green leaves will droop and then eventually drop off. The colored leaves, which are, you know, people call the flowers, it's technically not a flower. They call them a bract, and it's really more kind of like, you know, like the leaves on a tree that change color in the fall. Those don't fall off, but when the green ones fall off, the other ones don't look near as pretty.
Yeah. You know, and the first year I was here at Chicago's Progressive Talk, we had a competition we called a Bract-Off.
Yeah.
We got people to try to get their poinsettias to turn color. And I started, I think, in September.
Right. That's when they need to start.
Right. And to me, and I know you agree with me, and well, you agree with me because you grow them and you want to sell them.
Right.
But I, even just as a consumer, my feeling is if you can really jump through hoops of fire to get your poinsettia or poinsettia to bloom. But my feeling is, you know what, if you really want the pretty colors, go buy one at Shady Hill or someplace else like that. You know, they're not very expensive, and it can be very difficult to get them to rebloom. And I say rebloom, as you say, they're not blooms, they're bracts, but to get them to recolor.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, they're day length sensitive, so they need consistent lighting. And if you're doing it like by covering it or putting it in a closet or doing something like that, even if you miss one day or if you miss by a couple hours, you know, you'll see the effects of it. They're very sensitive to the light.
So how is it you guys do it? How do you get them?
Well, we do it just because, as you said, we're surrounded by cornfields, which give off very little light. But we just have no natural lighting in the greenhouse. You know, the genetics of poinsettias have come a long way. It used to be that there were not very many varieties, and so you would either light, you know, use artificial lighting, or you would use black cloth to cover them up to kind of manipulate an earlier blooming poinsettia or a later blooming poinsettia. Now there are so many different varieties that you can buy cuttings of an earlier blooming or a later blooming, and you use no artificial or supplemental lighting or shading, and they'll just come into color. We don't, like I said, at the greenhouse, we use no artificial light and no shading, and it's just the genetics of the plant that cause it to bloom. And even when they grow wild in Mexico, I mean, that's what attracted Joel Poinsett to the plant originally, is even when they grow wild in Mexico, that's just the natural bloom time is at Christmas.
Mm-hmm. And it's because of the light thing.
Exactly. Day length.
Day length, exactly. And as you point out, if you wanted, you can do it yourself, but you really have to stick to the schedule.
Right. And September 20th till October 20th, that's when they set flower. And so, like we're talking about the bracts change color at the same time that the flower does bloom. And the flower are those little tiny yellow things in the center, which they're often referred to as berries, but technically they're called cyathia. And it's those little yellow things that get, you know, like the pollen in the middle. And they used to be the centers far more prominent on an old-fashioned poinsettia, so that when those berries or cyathia were spent or done, when they fell off, you would have this big kind of giant hole in the middle. As the breeding has progressed, the cyathia or berries have become far smaller, so that when they're past their prime of the berries, which, you know, are pretty insignificant, they can fall off and you don't even notice.
Yeah, they are tiny.
Yeah.
That's interesting the way they've been bred. That's Joe Hygin from Shady Hill Gardens in Elburn, www.shadyhill.com. You're open through the end of the week?
We are, through Friday of this week, 11 to 4 today and 9 to 5 all during the week.
You might want to stop by. What's the latest and greatest innovation in poinsettias this year?
I would say the most popular new one we have this year, it was new last year, but it's very popular. It's called Ice Punch, and Ice Punch has, it's like a cherry red, kind of a rosy red color, and then the center of each bract has a very irregular white marking. So some are fairly bright white, some are kind of a mottled white and pink. It's a really cool looking variety. A brand new variety that we have this year is called Orange Spice, and it's like day glow orange.
Wow.
You know, it might not sound that great in a poinsettia, and I might kind of agree.
Oh, no!
No, it's definitely different looking. And the poinsettia breeders are always thinking that they're going to breed a color that people are going to use for another season. But
it's Christmas. They're supposed to be red.
I hear you. But
that's like having an orange fire truck. It just doesn't work.
Come on now. We might have people buying them today, so don't make them feel bad.
Well, okay, but, you know, well, here's the deal, though. If you're buying a dozen, you might pop in a couple of orange ones,
yeah,
you know, and
right.
then it looks
that
cool.
That would be really pretty. And the white ones, too. Are the white ones technically poinsettias? Or are they something
different? Yeah,
okay. Yeah, it's not like white chocolate. They really are poinsettias. There's a new real hoity-toity one this year, and it's got a hoity-toity name to go with it called Visions of Grandeur.
Ooh.
But it's kind of cool. I don't know, Mike, I think you've seen. A number of years ago, there was a popular one called Winter Rose, and the bracts, instead of being a big, flat, open bract, they kind of curled back. And so each flower was like this little, I don't know, it was like between a tennis ball and ping pong ball-sized flower.
And it looked like a rose.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a very nice one and very interesting.
And
I mean,
it's still around, and we grow it, but it's not anywhere near as popular as when it first came out. But this one has a little bit of that in that the bracts are somewhat curly, but they're still open, and it gives a very, I want to say, like, pillowy, fluffy texture to it, and it's a real, real, real pale salmon, kind of salmony pink. It's cool looking. It's definitely different. There's that, and then we got one that's the real irregularly marked ones, you know, that are instable varieties that are have just real irregular markings. There's one called Ruby Frost, and it's like rose pink with cream mixed into it. It's cool.
You know, but as you say, if somebody's coming in to buy one or two, they're going to get red.
Well,
you know that.
I think between 75% and 80% of what we grow is red. So that red, and then 10% to 12% is white, and then all those other novelty colors make up the balance. So we always say people are far more experimental in smaller sizes. Like, they love to get little ones that are different colors. But the larger the plant, the more traditional people become. So
absolutely.
If you're getting a huge one, you're definitely getting red. Maybe white if you're a real gambler.
Wow. Ooh, don't go out on a limb there with the white. Mm.
Exactly.
All right, let's move quickly to another plant that people associate with the holiday, and sometimes with Easter, and that's it's a Christmas cactus, or sometimes called Easter cactus.
Right, and they're technically a zygocactus, and it's a little bit of a misnomer because they're a cactus, but they're not a desert cactus. They're a jungle cactus. So they're actually a plant that likes a little bit of humidity. They definitely thrive on a little neglect, and that's why people say, you know, I have my grandmas, I have my great-grandmas, or whatever, and they'll have these plants that have been around for a long, long time.
Oh, my goodness, decades, yeah.
Didn't you have a really big one for a while?
I did. And I have no idea what happened. I probably killed it.
Nice.
You know, and this is a plant you can't kill.
No.
So that tells you something about me. People have these things forever. And as you say, they thrive on neglect. I had a woman, I think it was at a garden talk recently, tell me that she had had a Christmas cactus, a zygocactus, that she grew for years and couldn't get to bloom, and then she took it outside,
right?
And of course it bloomed, and basically the same thing there are two things that can trigger the blooms with a zygocactus, and one is temperature and the other is light, as you say, the number of hours in a light hours in a day.
Yeah.
And I think she had both at work that triggered it, because she took it outside, and I think the change in, because she had it out through September, and then the change in temperature affected it, and there's a mechanism when it gets the temperature gets a little lower, it triggers the bloom, but also the light. So maybe you can explain that a little bit.
Well, I think the people that I hear that have the best luck with them, we have a couple that we keep, like, for display, and we keep in the greenhouse all year round. So they do well and grow and are happy. They always seem to bloom a little bit early. Like, they're always blooming shortly after Thanksgiving as opposed to right at Christmas time. But the people that have the best luck with them, like you say, they take them outside in the summertime. They want to be, you know, in a, not a full sun spot, but maybe, you know, bright shade or something like that. But they love the humidity that we have outside. And then the trick is to leave them outside until we get one night, you know, say 40 degrees or 45 degrees, and then you bring it in. And the day length definitely has something to do with it, because, like, the ones that stay in the greenhouse are at a fairly constant temperature. But the cooling off definitely seems to trigger them into bloom, and people bring them in. And like you said, we get a lot of people that say, well, it'll bloom at Christmas, but then it'll bloom again in early spring, so around Easter. Mm-hmm. And I think that's from living inside with different light conditions, because, well, people turn lights on in their house at night and, you know, a fairly constant temperature. So yeah. Sometimes that will mess up the cycle and totally delay it, or sometimes it'll, you know, coax another round of blooms out of it.
But. And that, by the way, talking to Joe Hygem, Shady Hill Gardens out in Elburn, and that's a plant, I think, that is more like you described earlier, traditional plants you have indoors. Basically water it, let it dry out, and then, you know, don't keep it too wet, because it doesn't like that.
Right, and we'll often chuckle. Like, people will bring these things into the greenhouse, and they'll go, I want this repotted. Now, you know, I've had it for 45 years, and I'm always like, oh, no. But, you know, they really do just thrive on a little bit of neglect. The less you kind of fuss with it, the better off you are. I would say, like I was saying about them, like in the humidity, the one issue that sometimes people have with them, whether they have one that is established or whether they have one that they purchase, you know, they get these little tiny buds that start off, you know, they're smaller than a pea. They're like, you know, like a grain of popcorn or something like that on the edges of the leaves. Sometimes when people take them home, those will start to fall off, and they'll fall off because of the dryness in your house as opposed to the humidity in a greenhouse, or if they were grown, say, in Florida or something and got shipped here. So I think especially around the time that they're blooming, they're one of those plants that benefits from, if you have the pot sitting in a saucer with gravel with a little water in it, it just gives it a little bit of more moisture around the plant, and they definitely like that.
Finally, before I let you go, the third one that people get a lot is the amaryllis.
Right. The amaryllis, and we don't sell the bulbs, just the bulbs. We sell them growing already because, you know, depending on conditions, they're going to take anywhere from 4 to 7 weeks to bloom. So if you got one, certainly now, it's not going to bloom at Christmas. It's still a beautiful plant, but they are a bulb that blooms and does not need a cooling period. They need a rest period, but they don't need a cooling. So if you get one and it's going to bloom and it blooms for you, you can let it grow. It'll get those strappy leaves, you know, and mm-hmm. sometimes they'll send up a second bloom, but often not. And then if you want to get it to rebloom, you know, like say a tulip or a daffodil or a hyacinth, those need to be cooled for 6 to 8 weeks. An amaryllis, they just need to rest, and rest means they need to be in a dark spot. They don't want to be wet, and it could be somewhat cool. By cool, I mean it doesn't have to be freezing. But if you put them in a brown paper bag and put them in your basement for 6 to 8 weeks, after that, you can get them out, plant them again, and they'll bloom again.
Or you can leave it in the pot. You know, you can put them in soil and then have them come back year after year. I've got one that I have that sometimes blooms for me and sometimes doesn't, because
right.
I don't really take perfect care of it. But you know, at some time late in summer, early fall, you stop watering it, you put it in a dark place, and the leaves die back, and then you let it, as you say, rest, and then you start watering it again at a certain time after a couple of months, and it will start to send up leaves again. And depending on how well you've taken care of it, whether you've fertilized it during the year, and whether it's the bulb has been recharged, it might send up a flower stalk again, or in some years maybe it won't, but the plant will continue to grow. And I stopped watering mine. I always forget, and I water them way too late into the fall. And then, for instance, I stopped watering my amaryllis plant 2 months ago. It's in the basement, but the leaves are still green.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. It just refused to die back for me.
We always plant the ones that we plant in pots. We plant a first planting around October 15th and then another one 2 weeks later. You know, there'll be a little bit of variation in varieties. But, I mean, I've got ones at the greenhouse right now that are – they've got buds, but they're not quite blooming. So they'll be blooming a week from now. So, you know, and then you got a couple, as we call them technically, the duds that are sitting there. And they've got like one little 2-inch piece of leaf coming out. And you're like, that's all you can do since October? Come on.
The
those
duds.
Usually come home to somebody's house, and then somebody will, you know, employee-wise will email me in, you know, right after Valentine's Day and go, oh, that amaryllis is beautiful. And I'm like, yeah, but it's February.
Yeah, I know. I never have mine bloom for Christmas. Usually it's February or March, and suddenly I've got this bloom. And then what I do is I just treat it as a harbinger of spring.
Sure. If you're going to fertilize them, the best time to fertilize them, Mike, is right after they're done blooming.
Yeah. So that's the trick. I will do that this time.
All right,
Joe Hygin, thank you so much. It's been too long since we've talked. Again, you can go to Shady Hill. Give me the address there, Joe.
It's one of those rural ones, 42W075.
Basically, head west on Roosevelt Road. That's
we're west of Randall and east of 47.
There you go. That's all you need to know.
There you go.
It's www.shadyhill.com. Joe, I have a wonderful holiday. Say hello to all those crazy hygiens for me.
I will, and Merry Christmas to you and Kathleen.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And we've got the problems of indoor plants solved.
All of them?
All of them.
Really?
No.
Didn't think so.
Not even close. All right. Rick DeMaio Weather is coming up in just a sec.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure. You're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Here's a tip from the care of trees. Actually, it's a few fun facts about Christmas trees. All right, check it out. In the United States, there are around 500 million real Christmas trees growing on U.S. farms. Also in the U.S., there are more than 12,000 cut-your-own farms. This is a cool thing. I don't know if you knew about this, Heather. From 1887 to 1933, a fishing schooner called the Christmas Ship would tie up at the Clark Street Bridge in Chicago and sell spruce trees that had been grown in Michigan, and they would sell them to Chicagoans. That would be a great place to buy your Christmas tree.
That would be.
Go to the schooner. The first decorated Christmas tree was in Riga, Latvia, in what year?
First decorated Christmas tree ever?
Yes. I don't know how they know this, but
1648.
That's a pretty good guess. 1510.
Ooh!
Not bad.
Thanks.
The first Christmas tree retail lot in the United States was started in New York by Mark Carr. What year? First Christmas tree lot in
New York City?
Yeah.
New York City. 1810?
1851.
Ooh!
Ooh! Christmas trees are grown in all 50 states. Did you know that? Including Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah. There are over 500 Christmas tree growers in Illinois. In 1856, Franklin Pierce, the 14th president of the United States, was the first president to place a Christmas tree in the White House. And finally, watering tip, in the first week, a tree in your home will consume as much as a quart of water per day. That's why you got to keep them hydrated. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
So remember last week when I said that it wasn't exactly panic time for holiday gifts? Well, today's the 18th. Next Sunday's Christmas. It is now officially panic time. So take some advice from your old pal Mike. Get your gardening friends and relatives a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Why? Well, in each issue, you'll learn the do's and don'ts of your Zone 5 garden, indoors and out. For instance, in the November-December edition, now on sale, there are articles about the plants that provide winter color in your garden, how to grow microgreens so you can have fresh salads all winter long, which salt products are best for your sidewalk and best for your garden at the same time, which rhododendrons are good for our area, which is really a tough place to grow rhododendrons, in case you didn't know. How to make your amaryllis plant spectacular. We just talked about that. And even if you don't know what an amaryllis plant is. And there's more. There's even my column on the inside back page. It does a good job propping up the back cover. Give the gift of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine this year. To subscribe for yourself or somebody else, call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com.
I should have hung my stocking on a wall, didn't get a thing at all. Don't believe in Christmas, don't believe in Christmas, don't believe in Christmas, cause I didn't get nothing last year.
Well, you know, the kiddies are spared this year, Heather, because I can't access the music unless I can find it. I'll have to see if I can track it down. The dangerous song to play when kiddies are listening. My favorite Christmas song.
Your favorite Christmas song. Yes, I do not know.
SC is a lie. That one, yeah. All right, let us go to Rick DeMille. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, there, Mike. You guys having a good time this morning?
We are actually considering that. This is the last live show before the holiday.
Before the new year.
Yeah. You know what I'm going to do for you, Rick? I'm going to give you Christmas Day off.
Oh. Well, I could tape something ahead of time and see if it works out right.
Yeah, but I'd have to record it.
Does weather work pre-recorded? Wasn't that in the movie L.A. Story?
You know what? I stay away from any stories about weathermen. They're just kind of dumb.
But aren't you on YouTube at some place there, Rick?
Yeah, I'm sure in a bunch of places. As long as every new crop of students that I get each semester, they go, "Oh, Mr. DeMille, I googled you on YouTube."
And what was the faux pas you did on that ended up on YouTube?
I think I exchanged the M in math for no M in math.
Okay.
Well, don't you get it?
No, I don't. I'm trying to think.
Oh, God. Heather, what happens when you take the M out of math? What do you get? Instead of a big mass, you get a big?
Ath.
There you go.
I sound like Cindy Brady. Yeah.
You need the lift going there as well.
Ath.
you like that one, huh? It's always interesting when new students kind of, you know, come into your class and they Google you and there you are, blah, blah, blah.
So everybody listening to the show right now, go to YouTube and type in Rick DeMaio.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm impressed. I haven't made a YouTube blooper yet, so, I need to do some TV, I guess.
It's kind of interesting. I mean, they have YouTube. Why don't they have U Radio or something like that, right? Or U Speaker or something.
They do, actually. People put radio clips up there, and then they just put a picture on, and you listen to
it.
Right,
I heard of that.
An audio file.
You sit there and you watch it. Like, hey, why am I watching something? All I got to do is listen to it. But, it's pretty weird. So, hey, we got our first inch of snow the other day.
You know, I woke up. There was snow.
Yeah.
How about that?
It was nice. And you know what? It went largely actually unforecasted. I mean, I think a lot of us were thinking, maybe a dusting to a half inch, but some places out in DeKalb that, you know, where your signal is obviously pretty strong as well, got about 2 inches.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all going to be gone by later on this afternoon. A lot of sun today, temperatures low 40s. So by later on this evening, the little dusting of snow that always makes things look so much more Christmassy this time of year is basically gone.
Oh.
I don't think we're going to see anything the rest of this week as far as snowfall.
So a snowless Christmas, huh?
Yeah, it'll be the first snowless Christmas around here in a while. We've actually had, you know, some Thanksgivings where we've had some snow on the ground, but even that turned out to be, you know, a mild event as well. So the month of December, Mike, may actually go down. If we don't get anything this week, the pattern does change a little bit towards a colder, snowier one. Now, it's not like it hasn't been a cold and snowy one across the United States. We've actually had quite a bit of snow, but we just haven't had it here in Chicago. So when people say, what happened to our cold and snowy winter, not that I was ever going for a snowy cold.
No, you were the loyal opposition.
Right.
Yeah, and people are still referring to that. I saw a headline this week,
where's our cold and snowy?
Yeah, where's that brutal winter that was forecast?
Yeah, well, we have to remind people that, I mean, think about it, Mike, technically winter has not started yet, right? From an astronomical sense.
But see, Tom Skilling fools people because he's always talking about meteorological winter, which starts December 1st.
And you and I both know that that's actually the better way to look at it. You have meteorological winter, you have climatological winter. So our meteorological winter actually began on the 1st of December. So we still have a lot of winter to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, you know, you really got to look at things, you know, in perspective, you know, once you're 90% through it to really say what kind of winter you had. So not that I want it, but there's definitely a lot more time for that. So I know we don't have a lot of time here, so why don't we just get into the forecast. So sunshine today, low to mid-40s, amazing weather for the Bears game this afternoon. Hopefully they'll...
I'm sorry. Who cares?
in case people are going out to the game. I mean, this is one of those things where...
That's true. Those people are stuck because they still have their tickets. You know,
right. I know.
Sorry. I am so.
I get a lot of emails at Lewis University for people saying, "Anybody want my Bears tickets? A good price." You know. So
the only thing to shoot for this year, besides maybe some miracle they squeak into the playoffs and then lose in the first round, is I'm
Ouch.
Such a is Green Bay, but they're playing in Green Bay. You know, this is going to be just so brutal to watch Green Bay go 19-0 and win the Super Bowl again. Mm-hmm. And
I'm at the point where I just want to beat them. I don't care about the playoffs. I just want to see Aaron Rodgers leave the field a broken shell of a man forever. He wakes up in the night in cold sweat, seeing number 54 charging him.
It's not going to happen.
Don't take me out of my happy place.
I was in a happy place last week until Tebow prayed to God to make one of the Bears. He prayed to
get your atheist friend back on the phone, and we'll talk about Tebow. Okay?
He prayed to make Mary. He prayed to make Marion Barber stupid, and it happened.
Yeah.
And God did it. It was so cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Next thing you know, we're going to see like a banana peel under his foot. You know?
Did God put like that there? Anyway,
so a little bit of definitely made a lot of sun today, Mike, and then actually a pretty good looking day tomorrow, though it's going to be cooler than today with temperatures only in the 30s.
and then a little bit of rain mixed with snow late tomorrow night into Tuesday, and then the rest of the week kind of like a typical, almost like a late November, almost like we're getting November weather in December, with temperatures mainly in the mid-30s, but nothing in the way of any Arctic cold. There's not really any pattern change going on. So we'll see how things work out for the next 4 or 5 days, but I've actually cut down on my snowfall forecast for the season.
Really? What have you got it down to now?
35 to 40 inches. I had it at one point up to 45 to 50, but you always have to kind of work through this and see how things go. And it's just a matter of that things just didn't, you know, things just didn't for, you know, work out well for us snow-wise. But we'll see the rest of the week.
Well, but, you know, a lot of people are happy about that.
I'm not complaining one bit. You know, I've had to do a lot of driving over the last week. I finally got all my exams graded and 10 scores in and grades in over the yesterday. So this week is a non-work week for me, but I start bright and early working Channel 2 11 straight days on the 24th of December.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ah, the holiday guy. Let's go to Rick DeMaio. So no wonder you volunteered to be on the show. You're going to be working anyway.
Well, I never stop working. It's a hobby for me.
I know. I always impress my friends. I say my meteorologist, he teaches like at 18 colleges.
People to know that. But that's okay.
And he's on TV, and he's writing books, and he's making predictions. And, you know, it's funny about the snow, though. Everybody wants snow for Christmas, and then they want it to stop.
Right.
I don't want it at all. At all.
Oh, okay. Well, as if, you know, come January 1st, yeah, that's perfect. The snow will stop for the next 2 months.
Yeah, well, I know
months.
Everyone's talking like, oh, it's not so bad. I'm like, January and February aren't here yet.
Yeah, I know. It's always funny how we want it on the side of the road, but not in my lane of traffic.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very much where I come from when with snow. Right. I'm unreasonable.
And you know, as it turns out right now, the brutal winter has so far been a very mild and tame winter.
Yeah, I mean, generally we've been about 4.5 to about 5 degrees above normal. And again, we haven't had anything. By this time last December, we already had temperatures. I was just doing some math before the show. 10 days where the readings were for the afternoon high in the mid-teens.
Wow.
And we had 9 days in the single digits. And we have not had one day that cold yet. So it's a very, very different December compared to last year. But we've had some very brutal Decembers. But the thing about it is we actually had a very tame February last year, even after we had that big blizzard on
the
first and second.
Yeah.
We had basically no snow the rest of the year. And then even though the month of March was a kind of cloudy gray one, we didn't really have the winter weather. So you know, sometimes you just got to look at how things are on the long term. And I think so far we've gotten to this point in the month, and I think we have another 7 days of relatively easy weather, and I think the pattern may actually work out well for the rest of the month.
Okay.
The next 2 weeks don't look too bad.
Great. See Rick DeMaio, Channel 2, starting the 24th. We'll talk to you. We'll see what happens next week.
Okay,
have a wonderful Christmas.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Stick around for the next hour. Okay, folks, this is where I do my disclaimer and say, if you got kids in the car, very young, might want no. It's not dirty. It's not scatological. It's something else. I have the little disclaimer. This is my traditional holiday cheer to people who are angry and cynical. Okay, let's roll it.
Santa Claus is a lie. He's a big fat red faced lie. He's a roly poly lie in a big red suit. He's a jolly old lie in black boots. Oh, Santa Claus is alive.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
With nothing better to do, on Dasher, on Prancer, or on Donner and Blitzen.
Keep the children away from the radio. Right now, get the kids away from the radio.
Guys don't fit very nimbly down the chimbley. Santa Claus is a lie.
You're an evil man, Michael Novak.
I am an evil man.
Evil, evil man.
Okay. It just warms the cockles of my heart to play that song.
When you say that, I get the Grinch, you know, and they show that teeny little heart inside.
That's me.
When it comes to Christmas, when it comes to trees and plants, you're the real big one. But when it comes to
Santa Claus.
And the children.
And the children.
At Christmas time. What did you say earlier? The tyranny? The tyranny of Christmas is children.
Yes, the tyranny of Christmas is. That's my quote
just
of the
week.
I'm
happy you're not a dad. No offense.
Can you imagine
some jaded kids walking around?
Can you imagine what kind of dad I would have been?
I think Kathleen just fell down.
Oh. That would have been really scary.
Oh, boy.
Okay, welcome back. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. See, I think that song we played just now is very progressive.
I think it's progressive, and I think it's hysterical. Don't get me wrong. I'm not without a sense of humor, but it's just like, keep the small children away. Because I have to say, I mean, Christmas got a lot less fun for me as I got older, but then when I had my son and then my family grew and now that we have the kids, it's better than it ever was before. Just the whole, and it's right out of a Norman Rockwell, you know, Saturday Post cover. Because it's just like you're making cookies and they're talking to Santa. And
you know,
I still like
making pumpkin pie and the smell of pumpkin pie, you know, cooking is kind of cool.
It's so fun, though. And then when they wake up and the cookies are eaten and the milk's gone and they're so excited and, it's super fun. It really is. And the caroling and the snowmen. And my son asked if we can go out and get special carrots just to build a snowman because he was hoping that Rick's forecast was going to drop, 4 feet on us.
Nope.
Thank God. No snow.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
you're
okay.
happy.
Mom's happy. I'm the mom who's out there. We roll the head, and I'm like, I'm cold. You want some cocoa? Yeah. That's me.
In the studio, in the second hour, I'm very pleased to have Peggy Salazar, Executive Director of the Southeast Environmental Task Force, and Tom Shepard is here also. Tom is my go-to. I'll tell you what. Can we slide those around so each of them has a microphone? And in the new studio, there'll be dozens and dozens of microphones, right?
Yes.
All right. You're nodding. Yes.
Yes. I won't be next to you. I'll be in a glass box.
Thank you. I mean, that's a shame. You'll be in the glass box.
I don't have button control, just so you know.
I don't have mute control in the glass box in the new place? Oh, this is not.
I do.
I got to talk to the powers that be. Anyway, Tom, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
And Peggy, thank you for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. Good morning.
You guys have good news. I mean, Tom, it's interesting. Tom wrote to me this past week, and he said, did you see the governor's announcement? And I have to tell you, it's the holiday season. It's the holiday season. And what I do is I'm out running around caroling and performing and doing gigs, and I miss a lot of what's going on. And I hope, to see some of the news stories. And I'm glad when people like Tom write to me and say, hey, this is good, because this is good news for the Southeast side, good news for Calumet. Who wants to, Peggy, tell me what happened last week that Tom had to remind me of.
Well, we had the governor and our mayor announce that the Millennium Reserve Plan, it's an initiative, hopefully to capture some funding for the Southeast side to continue the work that's being done in the natural areas, the restoration work. In addition, it'll be an economic boost because hopefully there'll be jobs generated by some of the projects that are going to go in there, like the trail building, and they're supposed to build two bridges that'll connect trails that's necessary to go over railroad tracks, and so there's a lot of stuff hopefully coming our way.
How did this happen? It's sad, but in the past we talk about the Southeast side, and it usually seems to be the stepchild of environmentalism, where you guys are the last to have good things happen. But suddenly somebody has stepped up here, and I guess Congressman Mike Quigley was one of those people.
Congressman Quigley had been working out in the Calumet area with us for quite some time now. It's not his district. Of course, he's a North Side congressman, but he was out for the announcement. We're grateful to him for all the work and for him hanging in there as long as he has with us, because he's back when he was Cook County Commissioner, he had been out, and we were talking about taking some of the lands, open lands out in that area, and putting them into the county forest preserve system. So he's been with us a long time, and he's helped us out with the ideas and getting it across the goal line. So we hope we're just about there.
So we're talking about a huge area, and if you go to MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show, you'll see the map of the Millennium Reserve, and it's Illinois and Indiana?
Right. Uh-huh.
And there's a core project zone that now that's where the activity is going to happen first.
In the core, right.
Peggy, what's the core all about here?
Well, I would say the core is kind of like, you know, the equivalent of a shovel-ready project. That area has been designated open reserve space for quite a few years now. The problem is to get the funding to complete all the restoration work, and the task itself is monumental. It's a huge task to restore some of those areas.
Yeah, well, what kind of degradation are we talking about there?
Well, you have to remember that was an old industrial area, so we have all kinds of, you know, chemical dumping that went in there and contamination. And so, and plus, again, these areas are fragments of what used to be there. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to have the pristine kind of natural areas that, and so they've been degraded because of the fact that they're just really hanging in there to some extent. They're just barely hanging in there. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to make them people friendly, to make them attractive, to make them more natural, to bring them back closer to what they should be.
You know, forgive me for interrupting, but those are different agendas too. I mean, making it people friendly really is different from making it environmentally sound.
Well, that's true, but once it's environmentally sound, first of all, then you feel safe going on it. I mean, if there's contamination,
yeah.
Okay. And the other thing is that it's going to be attractive. In some ways, for example, the invasive species Phragmites, right now, if you see some of the wetland areas, I mean, they're just, you know, surrounded by Phragmites. So when people drive by, what they see is this huge, you know, wheat-looking kind of plant, where if you can get your cattails and draw the wildlife that should be there and things like that, it becomes more attractive.
That's a really good point. The Phragmites, I think folks, you know, when you drive along a freeway, often in the ditches and the wetlands, you'll see these plants, and they're actually kind of pretty, and they have the feathery, and I'm sure a lot of people go, oh, look at that native plant. Why don't we have more of those? Folks, those aren't natives. Those are plant. That's an invasive species that is choking out our waterways and choking out the native species. As you said, cattails are actually much more desirable. But the problem with cattails, there's also invasive cattails, and it's hard to even identify what a native cattail is.
Well, that's why this restoration work is so difficult, because to find the right balance, to find the things that you know, that actually belong there to make and help restore areas is not an easy task, because in itself, sometimes you need maintenance work just to keep, because these places are, again, like I said, just hanging in there. You need maintenance work that has to continue on even after the restoration work is done.
Mm-hmm.
You need maintenance work in order to keep this stuff going.
Well, yeah. Several weeks ago, we were talking about Midewin National Tall Grass Prairie, and how you can't just throw seeds down and say, okay, and now here comes the prairie. We'll just get out of the way. Because what happens is all the invasives come right back. You have to do it very carefully. And then you have to maintain it.
That's the key.
All the time. Because it will revert. Those plants, they're just looking for a toehold. And then, as we've seen with so many, like buckthorn and garlic mustard and all Phragmites, all the plants, they're just looking for an opportunity. And part of our problem is we've given it to them. We've allowed them to take over.
Right. And because, again, our environment has been changed drastically, and that's what appears to thrive in the areas, whereas the natives have a harder time.
Mm-hmm. In the studio, I have Peggy Salazar, Executive Director of the Southeast Environmental Task Force, Tom Shepard, who is the Secretary of the Board, and they're here to talk about the Millennium Reserve Initiative in the Calumet region. Now, I saw a figure of $17 million. That's just a start, right?
Right. That's like seed money, you might say.
Yeah, because, I mean, I can't imagine this can all get done. If you look at 140,000 acres... even just the core project zone is 15,000 acres. And are you going to be taking – I know you talked about brownfields down there with chemical residue. Are you going to be removing old buildings and things like that too? What's going to happen?
I'm not so sure that's on the agenda as yet. That part hasn't been hammered out. One of the first projects that is on the agenda, and I was with the governor the other night, and he is, I got to tell you, he is hot on this thing. It's
really,
it's right on.
Good for him.
It is, and he's been out there. I first met Governor Quinn back around 1986, right at Lake Calumet, and he's been out to keynote speaker for the Southeast Environmental Task Force annual dinner.
I'll tell you what, the next time you have dinner with the Gov, all right, tell him Mike Novak's been waiting for him to come back on his show, all right, and talk environmental issues. He's ducking me, okay?
Going up to the northwest side, maybe it'll be a little easier for him because I think he lives up that way.
Well, okay, maybe should I stalk him then? Should I just go to his house and hang out and say, Mike wants to talk to you on the radio again?
That might work.
Okay.
But one of the first things is connecting some trails that are out there. We've been working on being able to finish what we call the Burnham Greenway and the Burnham Trails, linking up with the CalSAG trails, and ultimately getting into downtown. So right now we have what's called the Burnham Gap, and one of the principal features of this project is to be able to link that up together so it'll go out to Indiana, it'll go downtown, and it'll go out to the western suburbs and the south part of the city.
So it's actually a greenway that connects the whole region.
Right, yes. And there will be historical markers and different. Recently, the Chicago Park District just took on 560 additional acres out there of marshes and open lands that they're going to develop into recreational properties. So this will help to link up all of that.
How long has this been in the works, this whole thing, this project?
I would have to say that it started back in the late 90s when a lot of different agencies and institutions in the city and state and federal governments came together to work on what was the Calumet Open Space Reserve. And this is kind of picking up on all the work that was adopted, by the way, by the City Council back in 2002 and sets aside almost identical to what the Millennium Reserve is going to accomplish here. So it's been over 10 years now, at least.
So that's hence the name Millennium. I was thinking, hey, you guys missed it by a decade. Maybe we should call it something else. But
I have to tell you, there was a lot of controversy among us members of the advisory group because we're pretty stuck on the Calumet name because it really identifies with our
area. Well, it does. You're right.
So we compromised. I think we got the Calumet core.
You got the Calumet core. But right. But you're right. Calumet, you say Calumet, people know what you're talking about.
Right.
And I know that there's a lot of people who have been fighting very hard in that region. One of them, Suzanne Malik McKenna, former director of the Department of the Environment, and I talked to her. And I know that this was a huge passion with her. And so I imagine you've worked with her and getting some things done.
Yeah, and that's like Thomas said, you know, this is like an overlay over the Calumet Reserve area. It really is. Like I said, a shovel-ready kind of project. And also, even before the city recognized, you have to remember the residents and community recognized the value of those wetlands long before anybody else did. And they put a lot of sweat equity in this because they had to fight off airports, landfills, bus barns in order to keep these areas open space. And this has been going on for a long time, even before, like I said, the city recognized these areas.
Good point. No, that there's always pressure to develop. You know,
yes.
The developers are always lurking.
There would be no Millennium Reserve if it had not been for the community and their intelligence and their foresight to see that these areas were valuable.
Uh-huh.
So that is why I always say I like to think we know what's best for our area, and that's always sometimes an issue for us.
One of the things you mentioned earlier, it's kind of interesting because in the second half of this hour, I'm going to be talking to some folks from LaSalle County about an open pit sand mine that threatens Starved Rock State Park. Mm-hmm. And the argument always made against environmental development is that it will cost jobs. Oh, you darned environmentalists. You're just going to take away our economy. What's wrong with you? And the first one of the first things you mentioned, Peggy, was it's going to create jobs. So why is it that you do the sand mine, then that's going to create jobs, and you know that saving up that park doesn't create jobs, but yours does. It's a rhetorical question, but the point is that you can create jobs by doing environmental work. Talk about some of those jobs that'll be created.
Well, for example, we talked about maintenance. Mm-hmm. Once you do restoration work, the restoration work itself creates jobs because it has to be physical. A lot of restoration is physical restoration. Mm-hmm. So that creates jobs. Then you have maintenance work that needs to be done continually for a long-term, forever, probably basis. So that's going to have jobs. So if you have people trained to do that work, that creates jobs. The other thing the task force has been doing for a few years, and we've actually stepped up the effort, is we do ecotourism, where we have people come in and see this. Many people don't know these areas exist. They don't even know Chicago has this much open space. It's hard to find that kind of stuff, especially anything that's remotely natural in a city, in an urban setting. Mm-hmm. So we feel there's opportunity here to bring in people from outside the community and also serve as sort of an economic engine, because then we can introduce them to local restaurants, bring them in so that hopefully they stop, and some of the businesses. And so we see this as an opportunity for that kind of stuff. We don't have at this point many assets, and I say this all the time on the southeast side of the city right now. These are our assets. We should develop and capitalize them the best we can while also preserving the environment.
I had something in my head and it just kind of went, burr, and sometimes that happens. But it was about the open lands there. Oh, I know what it was. It's you've done the Toxics to Treasures tours, and I think that's really ingenious on your part to take people around and say, here's what we have here. But I would imagine, wouldn't it be wonderful in a couple of decades not to be able to do that anymore, because most of this stuff is gone? I mean, not to say, well, here's the potential of our area, but unfortunately, this is the reality. And wouldn't it be wonderful if the reality became the open spaces and the natural area?
We're looking at that happening right now, Mike. The centerpiece of this entire project is Lake Calumet. Now, Lake Calumet is probably, what would you say, Peggy, about 20% of what it originally was. And Chicago has two other sizable lakes, and we have both of them in this in the footprint of this Calumet project.
When you say it's 20% of what it was, it used to be much larger and it's been
exactly,
drained?
Exactly, right.
It's filled in.
It's been filled in over the years. In fact, on the southeast side, they say that about 70% of the area has been filled by mostly from the steel mills, slag coming out of the mills.
Uh-huh.
So everything under the sun has been dumped in Lake Calumet at one time or another, and the areas around Lake Calumet. In fact, the Harborside Golf Course, which is an accomplishment there, one of the treasures on our Toxics Treasures Tour.
And I have played there.
Oh,
it's a beautiful course.
It really is indeed. However, we don't feel that that should be the end all of saying that the Lake Calumet area is open to the public.
Oh, heavens no. In fact, you could make an argument that it is beautiful, but it's not the kind of environmental progress you want. A golf course is not really an environmental
right.
treasure. It's just not.
Plus, it costs about $90 to play there, too. I know
and
you can afford it.
No, I cannot. I work in radio, remember?
But once you're on the golf course, you do get to see a view of Lake Calumet. Mm-hmm. And I think you will agree that it's very beautiful.
Yes.
We don't get to see that. The general public does not get to see that view because it's not open to the public, technically. So that's why we want to open up Lake Calumet.
And how are you going to do that? What will open up Lake Calumet? What kind of facility? What kind of area?
Well, I'd like to speak on that because it's right across from historic Pullman where I live. And
mm-hmm.
And I spent a lot of my youth out there fishing and hiking, bird watching, things like that. And after they built the golf course, we found that they put up a a concertina wire fence and around the entire Lake Calumet area.
Are you kidding me?
It looks like a state prison if you drive by, Mike.
And who? Who's they?
The owners of the golf course and the area around there. It's the Illinois International Port District, which is about to see some substantial change there. The board makeup is changing, the mood of the board, and in fact, the governor's direction is to begin to do something that we've been pushing for many, many years, and that's to get that fence down, to set aside some of that land for the public, for recreation, for conservation purposes, and not only for the golf course. There was a third golf course planned for that area, but it's not going to happen now, and we're hopeful that other types of projects are going to come there.
Governor Quinn, tear down this fence.
Yeah. Very good.
Thank you. but I had no idea. See, now now I feel bad that I golfed there, you know, and I don't want to be part of cutting people off from the lake.
When you go on our tour, we point all that stuff out.
So I have to be on the tour.
That's right. You have to be on one of
all
our
right.
tours.
Okay.
But we have some new members on that board. And
and how are the board members selected?
It's the entity is two governmental agencies. It's the state and city. So the mayor has half the appointments, and the governor has half the appointments on that board. And all past previous boards and the management there has been unfriendly to the community, to the environmental community anyway. They fought us at every turn. We've been partnering primarily with Friends of the Parks and other nonprofits to get things opened up over there. And it looks like our hard work is beginning to pay off with the new members that have a different opinion.
You have to keep making that progress. I mean, it sounds like you're going in the right direction, and now you're getting some help, and it's just a fabulous turnaround for your area. But of course, it's just a start, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And we still and I tell Tom and I tell our board, we're guardians of all of those plans, because there's been many things started. Nothing has been completed. We're mm-hmm. waiting for the Calumet.
Well, the golf course got completed.
Yeah.
And the fence.
Oh, that's true. But we're also waiting for the Ford Environmental Center. We have yet to see that. There's been no construction on that, and that was to be like the gem.
And haven't the plans been scaled back for that as well?
That's what we understand, but no one's actually told us what those plans look like or what it means in terms of usage or anything like that. So we're trying to keep that in our radar. Also, they're bringing back the firing range, the outdoor firing range, which we don't believe belongs in the middle of the reserve.
Who's advocating for that?
The city of Chicago.
City wants to bring back the firing range.
Yes.
Well, the city of Chicago, the city police department, the Chicago Police mm-hmm. Department has proposed. They are trying to get a lease from the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District that is one of the stakeholders in this area. They own a lot of the property out here. And the police department found a little pocket, a nice, quiet, pristine area where some threatened species of bird life are and wildlife is out there. And they want to put this training facility. It's a they call it a firing range and training facility. Our imaginations are running wild with all the different types of things that they want to do out there.
Couldn't you find them a slag heap?
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, why is it that you got so few areas that are left and they got
to
gobble up that?
Thank you.
Like you were saying earlier, sort of everything that nobody else wants gets put on the south side of Chicago, and I think that's part of this too. Mm-hmm. People don't want an outdoor firing range in their backyard. And so they're putting it here because it's a little isolated, but that's what makes this pocket so valuable to the wildlife, because it is isolated. But in addition to that, now that there's a landfill adjacent, 400 acres of landfill space that could be repurposed. It's closed. We were expecting it to be repurposed down the road.
Mm-hmm.
They had told us eventually there'd be natural covering on it, and that it would be used for hiking trails. And we were told all this was possible. And if the firing range is put there, none of that will happen, because they're not going to have public that close to a firing range.
All right, so I have to ask you, how does that something like that get changed? How do you lobby for that? I mean, who's behind that? Obviously, the police department.
The police department.
But is the city throwing its weight behind that? And that takes me to my other question is, how big an ally is Mayor Rahm Emanuel?
Well, he's been untested so far, I guess you would have to say. But we do know that he's advocating for it. The city police department is really pushing for it. So on January 5th, the Water Reclamation District commissioners are meeting, and they're considering this lease, which is a 39-year lease for the property.
So the Water Reclamation District is the ultimate arbiter of this?
Right. It did come
and
up,
why is that? Because it's near the lake?
Oh, they own the property.
They own the property.
They own the property, and the city wants to lease it from them.
So should we be lobbying the Water Reclamation District?
Exactly. At the, I think, a meeting back around when this was first proposed around late summer, two of the commissioners, Deborah Shore and Frank Avila, voted to not grant this lease.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, those two votes.
Right, yeah. But, well, what surprised us was there were seven or eight others that voted against it, so in favor of the gun range.
In a pristine area.
Right. So we were able to ask them to do a wildlife study, and we're going to see the results of that study, and it's going to be coming back up on January 5th. And
why do all these things? I mean, we're going to find out, and I'm going to have to let you go in just a second. Mm-hmm. We find out that all these things happen in the holidays, these crucial votes. And what I've discovered is in the holidays, nobody's paying attention except the people whose vested interests are there. And then they have these meetings on January 5th or December 28th or, you know, and half the people that would get involved are out of town or with family.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
it's like these politicians are really crafty. They mm-hmm. they know their stuff.
Right.
They know when to have meetings. You know, they should
so
be more.
So then that makes you wonder, is it such a good thing if this is what they have to do in order to accomplish what they want? If this is the kind of methods they have to employ, is it necessarily a good thing? And so this is why we're so, you know, determined, because, again, like I said earlier in our conversation, we knew what was good for us in that community. We understood the value of those areas, and the community had the foresight to see the potential. I think we're smart enough to know that this doesn't belong there.
You know, and what's interesting is I look at you too, and I know the history of the Southeast Environmental Task Force. I served on the Chicago Recycling Coalition Board with Marianne Burns, who was just a wonderful woman.
Conscience of the Calumet, she's known as.
Yeah, and who passed away last year. And it's just battle after battle after battle after battle. And then, you know, and I wrote on my website about this. Here we are. This is good news. And yet, yeah, it's kind of good news, but it's still more battles and more battles and more battles to make this happen. Environmentalists everywhere are always fighting these battles. It just never stops.
Right.
You know, you don't have time for the holidays, really. You can't relax. You can't go play because somebody's going to sneak in and pass a law that hurts you for the next 50 years or put up a shooting range in a pristine area or whatever.
Right.
Or a fence around the lake.
The fence.
So the golfers can't get to the lake and swim, you know, when we want to.
We're so grateful to our membership and all of the dedicated environmentalists in the Southeast area. There are a number of them, and we're grateful to you, Mike, for this show, because it's the only one. I keep hearing you say on your promos that you're the only one in the country that does this, and we're happy that you do, and we're grateful to Suzanne Malik McKenna, too, for all the work that she did, working side by side with Marion in years past and with us.
Yeah, she's, as a matter of fact, for people who want to, I just got information about Suzanne Malik McKenna this week. She's going to be senior counsel with, I don't even know how you pronounce this, Jaskulka Terman and Associates, and they're a strategic communications firm. And she's also going to be doing the Regional Trees Initiative on behalf of the Morton Arboretum. So, you know, I knew that she was going to land on her feet. What is just really frustrating to me is that the Department of the Environment, as of January 1st, will cease to exist in the city of Chicago. And that's not a good thing.
It's sort of contrary, knowing that they have the Millennium Reserve Plan and the Calumet Core, and then to find out that we don't have a Department of Environment. It doesn't make sense, does it, sort of?
Yeah. No, it doesn't to me. And mm-hmm. and you said, Tom, that Mayor Emanuel is untested. He's on my watch list right now. I'm serious. I'm a lot leery of the direction it's going, and certainly in terms of the environment, because I just think that putting these various programs into different departments, it's a way to hide them, and it's a way to smash them, fund them out of existence.
Or steal money from them?
It's a good thing Heather doesn't have her mic on over there. But so, and I can say I'm the radio guy. I don't have to work with him. But on the other hand, I would love to have Karen Weigert, his chief sustainability officer, on the program. I met her the other week at the award ceremony for the Gardener of the Year and the Mayor's Landscaping Awards. You know, and that was one thing, too. That might even go away. And I'm thinking, come on, guy.
Yeah.
You know, there's no enthusiasm, no real enthusiasm that I'm seeing coming out of this administration for some of the things that Mayor Daley did in terms of the environment.
Except bicycling.
Bicycling? Good. Well, yeah. Yay, there we go. We got bicycling. All right. Well, how about some of the other stuff? Mr. Emanuel, tear down that fence.
There you go.
That's what we have to do. All right. Well, Peggy Salazar, thank you so much. Tom Shepard, I love the fact that you're always communicating with me. Tom's always on Facebook with me and telling me stuff that's going on in the Southeast Side. Please keep me posted. You're welcome anytime on the show. And I think we should review this as we go forward because
there's
a lot of work left to do, right?
Yes.
You bet.
And a lot of battles, apparently, to fight.
Yeah, I think so. It just never ends, does it? It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We're going to talk another battle in just a couple of minutes.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. If you're one of those last-minute types, meaning you still don't have your Christmas tree, here's a reason to get a real tree this year. It's easy to recycle or reuse. The branches of a Christmas tree can be chipped or shredded or used as mulch in the yard. Obviously, the finer you chop it up, the faster it will decompose in the spring. Of course, you don't want to chop it up. If you don't want to chop it up yourself, your city will probably do it for you. On the other hand, branches from the tree can be used to cover plants to help protect them from the cold and wind and to keep the soil temperature even. And I found even another use that I was really quite encouraged by. It was kind of cool. I was doing some research this week about Christmas trees and so forth, and I found out about the Baker's Lake Nature Preserve in Barrington, where they take used Christmas trees to the island, which is a rookery for herons. And I didn't know about that. And sometimes you look around and you find things, and I thought that was awesome. So if you're out Barrington way, that is one place where you might want to take your trees. And if you've got live trees in your yard, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Ringer.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, see you soon.
Lots of luck and many presents and happy Crimble. That's all, I think.
This song is for you, Heather.
Christmas comes but once a year, they're really all the same. I never know just what I want, it really is a shame. Yesterday I saw something that is my pride and joy. I want it for Christmas, it's a real live Liverpool boy. Beetle, not a teddy bear, just a beetle.
I want Paul. Paul's my beetle. I'm a Paul girl. I'll take John, too. John and Paul.
All right,
little side of George. I'm okay with that, too.
We'll try to go back in time
Thank
for you.
Thank you. those eyes, still. Even photographs of those eyes are old 1960s footage of those eyes.
Well, you know, you might still have a chance. He gets married over and over and over again.
Now,
so.
He was the only Beatle to never been divorced up until when Linda passed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And now he just...
And then Heather, that one who ruined it.
We got a couple of tweets from Scott Jameson. He says, have you seen the snowy owls at Montrose? Remind listeners to watch from a distance and not flush them. Good for you. And he sends a photo. Did you click onto that and see
no,
that?
No, I did
it's
not
really
see the photo.
Cool. And he says, then he tweeted again, another great open space, Rollins Savannah near Gray's Lake. Short ear owl observed there last week. So really, really cool. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's go to line one and bring in Jack Darren, director of Illinois Sierra Club. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. And I was very glad that you sent me, well, you sent a lot of your followers, and I mean Sierra Club followers, an email this past week about what's going on over on the Illinois River near Starved Rock in LaSalle County. I didn't know about it. Fortunately, I found out about it a couple of days before I got your email from Bob, who lives in Rogers Park, who's got a house out that way also, and called the show. I had Josh Mogerman on last week from the NRDC, and he said, yeah, did you know about the open pit sand mine out by Starved Rock? And I said, nope, hadn't heard about it. And then, of course, 3 days later, I get your email. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on there?
Sure. You know, we heard about this from some of our members and some local residents there in LaSalle County who, I think about the end of November, turned to us for help because they saw what they feared their county rushing through a really huge 315-acre open pit sand mine that would be directly adjacent to Starved Rock, which, you know, if you've been anywhere outside in Illinois, odds are you've been to Starved Rock. It's just really one of the crown jewels of our state park system, over 2 million visitors a year, and a place where a lot of people who don't get to spend a lot of time outside, where they really get to connect to Illinois' natural heritage and something other than a strip mall or a subdivision or something paved.
I didn't realize strip malls were our natural heritage.
Well, we hope that is not the natural heritage that we will pass on to future generations.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And Starved Rock, I think to a lot of people, that's one of the icons of natural beauty in Illinois. And so when this came to our attention, we really wanted to help the local folks who sought our help. And digging into a little bit, no pun intended, we're pretty alarmed. There are some, not only are there some important marshes and natural areas on the site itself, but the fact that it's right next to Starved Rock and the hydrology is so connected to Starved Rock. And, you know, one of the most amazing natural features about that great park is the canyons and the springs that run through it. And because the mine site is sort of upland of some of those features, you know, digging a giant sand pit and disrupting the hydrology there would undoubtedly impact the park. And so we felt that we had to jump in and sort of sound the alarm to people who love that place and see what we could do. Now, unfortunately, in sort of the preliminary battle, the LaSalle County Zoning Board did, after two nights of marathon hearings this week, they did, by one vote, recommend the project, and now the county board will consider it in mid-January.
Okay, I thought it had been a unanimous vote. You're saying it was by one vote.
I was told that it was by one vote.
Well, I'll tell you what. I have two people on the line here who were at that meeting, and let's bring them into the conversation. We have Mike Phillips, who's a geologist and LaSalle County resident. How you doing, Mike?
Hi, how are you?
Good. And Debbie Burns, also a LaSalle County resident, and she's a planner out there. Debbie, you with us?
I am, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Can either of you tell me, do you know what the vote was the other day?
Was unanimous.
It was unanimous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I was wrong about that.
Okay. But that tells you something, too, doesn't it, Jack, that it was a unanimous? That doesn't bode well for the decision of the full board.
It does not, and, you know, we really would hope that, and we know that that most people in LaSalle County realize what a gift those parks are to the region, not only in terms of their beauty, but what they do for the local economy. And the partnership really there with the state has evolved to be essentially the state, through all of our tax dollars, protect those places, and we kind of count on the local governments to ensure that the land uses around them are compatible, and in this case, that appears to be in jeopardy.
Mike, you were there. You made a statement. You're a geologist, so you know something about the forces of nature at work here. What's your feeling about this this pit going up in this area?
Well, I should correct one thing right away, and that is that from the materials presented by the mining company and from my review of them, it does not look like the groundwater under the park would be impacted. So I would want to clear that up, because if people are in opposition to that, if you bring up something and then the mining company can say, well, no, that's not true, you know, then you're kind of back to ground zero.
Well, yeah, you know, it's as you go back and forth, it's really important to have your facts lined up, because they can be used against you, and it's already a critical issue. If you tell us that the groundwater is not affected, then why would you be opposed to it?
Well, the two main concerns I had. I had an opportunity to read through the entire application that was provided to the zoning board, and one of the things that became apparent to me right away was that there is a 73-acre wetland on the site. So it's a privately owned wetland, but it's a little bit unique. It's called a saline marsh, and it was delineated, the wetland area, the 73 acres, that was outlined by a consultant for the mining company, so they don't dispute its presence. Their mining plan is such that they will mine right up to the edge of it, because, of course, you can't destroy a wetland without a permit from the Army Corps of Engineers, but the process of mining up to the edge of that will lower the water table under that wetland and dry it out. So in the testimony presented during the hearing, the geologist for the mining company admitted that the wetland would probably be at least partially dewatered, and therefore they would not have to get a permit to mine through there because it wouldn't be a wetland anymore.
Wait. That's now we're doing Orwellian speak. Yeah, we're going to destroy the wetland. We can't destroy the wetland on purpose, but if we accidentally destroy the wetland, then we don't have to worry about mining there because it's not a wetland anymore. Is this what you're telling me, Mike?
Well, when I reviewed the materials, it became apparent to me that that would happen. And when the attorney for the people who are opposed to this mine asked the geologist, would this happen? And I hadn't talked to the attorney about that beforehand, so he kind of picked up on it all on his own. The geologist admitted that that's what would happen, and essentially that seemed to be their plan. That was how it came out in their testimony. So that's a big concern, that they could essentially mine through a 73-acre wetland and not even have to create another wetland somewhere else, which is problematic on its own, but that's part of the rules of the game, is that if you wreck a wetland, you have to build a new one somewhere else nearby. And their mine plan essentially would eliminate the need for that, or would appear to, because they would be able to dewater it. And then when they asked the Corps to come out, the Corps would look and say, well, that's not a wetland. And so then they could carry on mining without constructing a new one somewhere else. So that's a little disturbing.
Yeah. Jack, do you want to comment on that at all?
Yeah, I think you've hit on, unfortunately, a real weakness in the laws that protect wetlands. And we don't have any law in Illinois that protects wetlands, so we kind of rely on the federal Clean Water Act. The Clean Water Act is about preventing pollution. So there's one key way that the Clean Water Act prevents wetlands, so you can't dump stuff into them. And over the years, the government has interpreted that as including dirt and stuff to fill them in. So that you need a permit for. But unfortunately, drying one out is not polluting it and therefore is uncovered by the Clean Water Act, and we have no other state law there. So that's a giant loophole that that this wetland is vulnerable to.
Wow. I had no idea. That clarifies that. I'm going to go to Debbie. You were at this meeting the other night where the Zoning Commission voted unanimously to move forward on this. So how would you characterize their action? You were among folks who put up an opposition to it. In the end, how did the proceedings play out, in your opinion?
Well, Mike, I do sit on our Planning Commission for the City of Ottawa. I wasn't representing them at the hearings, but I have knowledge of planning and zoning, and we have heard some of this at the city level since mining has touched the city limits and our mile and a half in the past years.
And so, and to be sure, there are other mines in the area because you have this, and we should mention that this sand that's going to be mined is going to be used for fracking purposes. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And you happen to have the perfect sand in that county, in that region, for that kind of operation.
Yes, and we have lots and lots of that perfect sand in lots of locations in LaSalle County that, in my opinion, could be better planned for digging,
mm-hmm.
Could be better locations for the extracting of this, and would not have such a horrific negative impact on Starved Rock. And what that means to the state of Illinois. So the Zoning Board of Appeals, in my opinion, should have looked at the compatibility of that mine with its adjacent property. It is adjacent to Starved Rock. And the use of mining on that property is not compatible with Starved Rock. That is what the Zoning Board of Appeals had a responsibility to look at. And I was sorely disappointed that was not addressed. Many, many things were addressed, but that is number one in my mind when you look at zoning. And It went on deaf ears. The approach to Starved Rock is being impacted. You know that Route 71 is considered the scenic byway. It is the approach that people choose to take so often because you start at the canyons and you work through the canyons to get to the lodge, and that is the scenic route to Starved Rock. That's where this is. That's where the truck traffic will be, and all of the tourists will have to deal with that, and that has been a concern. It's a tremendous concern to our community, and I'm grateful that you are putting this on your station. I hope we're reaching people in this state who feel that passion as well and will get involved.
Well, Jack set it up perfectly, and Heather and I were sitting in here. We've both been the Starved Rock. We love Starved Rock. I'm trying to imagine somebody in the state who is not familiar with it, and if you haven't been to Starved Rock, you need to go before they put the sand mine there.
If I can add a little bit, this is the east end of Starved Rock, so the lodge is near the west entrance, and if you've been there over the summer on a weekend in the fall, it's very, very busy on the trails around the lodge. That's where the big parking lots are. That's where most of the people are. A lot of folks will go to the east end, to what's called Illinois Canyon. They will park there. They will walk out to what's called Shelter Point, or they'll hike up Illinois Canyon. If they want to have a kind of a more personal experience, if they want to experience, a little bit fewer people, a little bit more nature, more birds, and this mine will be adjacent to that east end. And when you're operating a mine, you can't avoid having some noise. There's going to be dust. And those kinds of aesthetic impacts are what will be experienced at the east end, which is kind of right now the quiet end of Starved Rock State Park. And I think that part of the difficulty for the zoning board is that when you're trying to compare land uses, it's very, very difficult to put a value on something as nebulous as an aesthetic experience, the sights, the sounds. What is that worth compared to the folks that come before the board and say, this is my farm ground and it's very bad for farming, and the folks who don't have jobs who would like to come there and work.
But as you said, you've told me that it would create maybe 35 jobs, somewhere between 30 and 40 jobs. And as what I've been trying to do, and we just have a couple of minutes left here, I've been trying to follow the money. Who really benefits from this? And if there aren't that many jobs and there isn't much of a tax base that's created by this, who's getting the money from this, and why would this go through unimpeded, especially when it's threatening such an important landmark in Illinois?
And Mike, if I may, we have to, if we're on that subject, we should consider the amount of jobs created by tourism with LaSalle County.
Exactly.
Hundreds of jobs, tax base that is in place for the county and the state to reap benefits from that. We want jobs in LaSalle County. Our operating engineers need jobs, but there is mining to be done in other places in this county.
Right, and I think that's the point. Yeah, you don't. Why do you have to do it right next to the state park? There's other places you can do it. I'm afraid
who is protecting that park.
Yeah,
well,
people like Jack Darren are protecting the park, and people like
you
who are stepping up and doing this. And now here's the story. I'm out of time now, but the board meeting is the 12th of January.
1 p.m. at the Knights of Columbus.
And here's what you sent me: a list of board members and their contact information. I'm going to put it on Facebook.
Thank you,
Debbie, and have my people. I know there's people listening in LaSalle County right now. Call them. Say, we don't want this there. You guys got to, you know, you have to stop and think about this and take slower steps. And what I, the other thing I'm going to do is talk about this again, probably on the 8th of January before the board meeting. We need to have another conversation because this does need to get out there. There's not enough people talking about this issue. And Jack, I want to thank you for calling it to my attention and everybody else who follows Illinois Sierra Club. And Mike,
The DNR really needs to weigh in on this. They haven't said anything about what they think about the impact on their piece of property,
yeah.
Their land.
That's a really good point, and I think we'll get to that the next time we talk. I'm flat out of time. Jack Darren, Director of Illinois Sierra Club, thank you. We're going to talk about this again. Mike Phillips, Debbie Burns from LaSalle County, thank you. We will keep talking.
Thank you. All right, everybody have a good day now. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Boy, I wish, you know, this we could go on forever with this.
We could.
Before we go, I had to say Merry Christmas to you.
And to you.
We will be here next week recorded.
Yes.
But I think we're going to stick some fun stuff in there.
Yes.
So,
there'll be a reason to tune in.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes, having on in the background on Christmas
Day. Chris and Palatine, we couldn't get to your song, but I posted it on our Facebook. Thank you very much.
And we're going to put the on Facebook right now, the board. LaSalle County, and call them. Tell them you don't want the sand mine. We'll talk more about that. Until next week, go green or...
Go home.